Welcome to the Warven and Energy podcast with me, Joseph Sikora, and Damon Smith. It's absolutely brilliant to be back. This is episode 43, and as always, we're going to be talking about shamanism from the ground up. So I've got a bit of a treat for you today, or Damon has anyway. We're going to talk about a practical technique, specifically on stage three. It's going to involve the shaman's drum, which is always interesting. And it's important to point out before we start here that, you know, it's important to have familiarity and really have got to grips with each of the stages so far. So we go you know, into lots of detail on each of the stages in this podcast. You know, we've talked about stage one in quite some depth, stage two in quite some depth, and we're kind of here on stage three. But each one of those stages rests on the previous one. It's really important that you have enough experience on each of those stages, because they support each other very much like the layers of a pagoda, right, Damon?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you said this episode's going to be a treat. I mean, if you're not a regular listener, this episode's definitely not going to be a treat. It's going to be probably quite hard to understand. If this is your first contact with the Warven Energy podcast, this is a kind of linear podcast, as Joe's hinting at. We've built a chain. It's almost like a course or something, isn't it, rather than a podcast. The best thing you can possibly do is wind all the way back to episode one and start working forwards from there. If you are the kind of person who listens to every episode more than once, which I know some of our listeners do that, and then you're definitely the kind of person who wants to be listening to this episode. That's probably the best way to put it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So speaking of which, we've a little while since we've done a Woven Energy episode, and so we have had a considerable number of patrons since the last one that we recorded. Rather than taking too long doing it, I'm just going to thank them all very briefly by name. I think they've all been thanked on the Heretics podcast, our sister podcast anyway. But let's just go through. So we've got Bryn Winkle, Max St. John, Brett Galloway, David Oswell put his contribution up. He's a long-standing patron. Thank you, David. Sampo Sutella, who's also put his contribution up very recently. Thank you very much, Sampo. That's amazing. And then I'm just scrolling up the list to get the next ones. We got Mika Vickberg and Anthony Whitlock. Thanks, guys. Then we got and a founder patron, which is amazing, who is anonymous, so we're calling him Harry, in inverted commas. Thanks very much, Harry. That's great. Neil Mickle and Stephen Harvey is our most recent patron. Thanks ever so much, Stephen. That's amazing.
Wow, quite a haul there, Damon.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Thank you ever so much, guys.
I think I've said it a million times, but you know, one time I'd have been happy with that number of listeners. In fact, I would have been delighted with that number of listeners. so the fact that they're patrons is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so should we dive in?
Yeah, that's cool.
So this is a level three technique, and it's going to involve the drum. So hopefully you've all purchased your shamanic drum. Damon, do you want to just briefly, I don't know whether you want to do this, but just talk about
the
drum. A bit of a recap on the actual drum itself.
Yeah. So we've talked about the drum quite a bit. I mean, most of the stuff we've done on level three techniques so far has been revolved around spirit dance. But as we've said many times, Bucik, which is level three, it has various names, Bo Bucik, can be done with spirit dance, but it can be done with a number of other things. We outlined a series of AMSCA level drum techniques before. The main one, I guess, that stuck in people's minds, and which is one that sort of stuck in the patrons' minds, was Bukking Hengrig, a Mongolian word, where there are you're learning to infuse yourself with the drum. AMSCA level technique is about coming to understand nature through the closest part of nature to you, which is your body. And Bukking Hengrig is about learning to use the drum to build an awareness of your body and how it relates to the outside world. So the drum, typically when you're learning, is held in the haftas of folded wings position. I think I did a photo of that somewhere. What I will do is I will stick a photo, an up-to-date photo of the haftas position with the drum on the Patreon members area. And so that we still, I'm sure it does exist somewhere out there. I just can't, it's so long ago now, can't remember where.
I think you sent it to me. You definitely have a picture of it. But I think it might be prudent to just point out that if people do want to support us on Patreon, which is, of course, much appreciated, and you do get extra stuff like Damon's just said. What's the address, Damon? It's patreon.com/woven.
Woven Energy. All one word.
Or no dash in between.
Yeah.
It's just Woven.
All one word, no dash. Yeah.
Patreon.com/woven energy.
Yeah. And so the drum is held close to the body. This is for booking Hengrig, which isn't the technique we're doing today, with this one we've already covered. And you hold it very loosely, as if your arm is a folded wing of a bird. The exact hand position for holding it, I've also done a picture of. It's held very lightly. The layout of the internals of your drum has a bearing on how lightly you can hold it. If you have one of the, I believe you've got one of the cross-shaped drums. Is that right, Joe? Where the handle inside the shape of a cross?
I'm just going to check.
Yeah. So that's not a great, for a beginner. It's fine for somebody who's experienced, but for a beginner, it's not a great layout. The one that I would suggest is what's known as a chrut layout, which is like a wheel. It's like the spokes of a wheel. As soon as you see it, you'll see what I'm talking about. So it's the tensioning strings on the back of the drum. They form like a wheel shape, like the spokes of a bicycle wheel. And that's the kind that I would recommend for beginners, new people starting out with a drum.
Yeah, mine's definitely a cross.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a cross, but you just have to hold it a bit more firmly. And that the need to hold it firmly makes it difficult, a bit more difficult to keep chelicity on when you start doing
the
technique.
I'd like to point something out as well. I remember you saying once that smell plays a good important factor in the drum, and the drum that I got, not only has it got a cross, but it actually smells of absolutely nothing. So it might be cool to go natural if you can. Purely
essential
because
oils.
For the practical reason that it's got a natural smell to it, which is a direct link to the limbic system and is quite crucial to.
That's right. So you need if you got one of these modern drums that smells nothing, then I recommend rubbing some essential oil inside the rim of the drum. Don't put it on the drum skin. Put it on the wooden rim, just to give a bit of a smell link to the drum. But obviously, if it's a traditionally made one, if you made it yourself, it's likely to smell. So that's when Joe was saying that you should have purchased a drum. I was sort of thinking you should have made a drum. As I've said many times, my first drum was a biscuit tin. So you can't do any worse than my first drum.
It'll smell of biscuits at least.
I don't know if I've come a long way or if I've gone a long way down in the world. There was a certain cool credibility to using a biscuit tin. But my current drum is absolutely gorgeous. It's a piece of artwork. It's made by a real artisan. It's just amazing artwork on it. And so I've gone from one extreme to the other pretty much over the period of 30-odd years. So you need some sort of link to the drum. Smell's a big part, as Joe rightly points out. And you can probably stand or sit for most of the drum technique exercises, certainly the first one we're going to talk about today. In booking Hengrig, you want to incline your head in towards the drum. I don't mean the back of a shamanic drum is usually open, and so you can, some of them you can actually literally stick your head inside it. You don't have to go at that extreme. You just want to put your face down near the drum so that you can feel the vibrations. You need to be comfortable. You need to be relaxed. You can stand, no problem. If you've got a sort of grove marked out, or you know, I have some standing stones in the garden, so you use the central focus point as what you're facing. So if you're using a standing stone, you'll be facing towards the standing stone, not away from it. And you need to achieve chelicity before you do any technique. Regular listeners know this; they know how to do this. So we've been over it in minute detail in the course of the podcast.
Yeah, the main episodes are episodes 7, 8, and 9, and then there's lots of references to it and additional material on it as the podcast progresses. But really, you want to start with 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah, that's right. The booking hang drag technique, which is sort of an AMSCA stroke cellisti level technique, you start by just going into a state cellisti and then the drum is struck. I'm not saying you strike the drum is struck on the breath. Yeah. So when the breath changes, it's the breath leads what you're doing. But once you get deep into the state, it's almost the drum is leading what you're doing. But we've been over this in detail on the podcast before, and I want to crack on because this is level one, stroke two. We want to talk about level three today. After that, you get into a deeper state of chelicity. Once you get good with that, then you start doing it on the heart rate. You can tell that you are in a state of chelicity if you're able to do that, because you know what your heart rate is if you're in a state of chelicity. You don't have to sort of hit the drumstick in your mouth and two fingers taking your pulse and hitting the drum. You know what your heart rate is if you're in a decent state of chelicity. And then the next level after that is just to, this is really preparation for spirit dance, not for level three drum technique, in which case you can just stay in that heart pass position. Between the strikes, between every three heartbeats, you can flip. It doesn't have to be exactly three, but roughly three. You can flip the drum from the outside grip to the inside grip. Remember, we're holding it in the outside grip in the half task position. That means that the drum skin is on the back of my left forearm, or right forearm if you're doing Toshu Teen, but left forearm. And when I flip to the inside position, I'm now in the tilt position, and the drum skin is on the inside of my left forearm. Yeah, so that's, and I can flip the drum between every three beats or four beats or five, just as the spirit takes you. Don't count them, it's just as you feel it's right time to flip the drum, then you flip the drum.
Might be nice for you to put that in the Patreon area as well.
Keep it going on the heartbeat, yeah. So that's the booking hang drag technique. It's a cool technique. It's very, very basic drum technique. You're obviously, when you're doing it on the breath, it's going to be going a lot more slowly. You do it as the breath changes. So that's from the out to the in or the in to the out. But it's going to be going a lot more slowly than it is on the heartbeat, especially if you're actually doing spirit dance at the same time, because all the spirit dance techniques we've talked about so far, they can all be done with booking hang drag. There's no problem with that. You could do homiluk at the same time if you want to be really, really sophisticated. All that kind of thing can be done. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But one of the things you definitely need to keep on when you're doing level three anything technique, it doesn't matter whether it's spirit dance or whether it's homiluk or whether it's a level three drum technique, you need to keep your ayuk on. Ayuk, if we recall, is this idea of a physical chelicity. Chelicity exists on a lot of different levels, but the normal way of doing things that people do in their everyday lives, flicking a light switch, sometimes it displays a small degree of chelicity, but more than often than not, because of the kind of societies that we live in, it doesn't. And this is the idea of that you need to embody chelicity throughout your being, throughout everything. It's not just something that you do in your mind as if we were doing like transcendental meditation or something like that. This is not just about the mind. This is the mind and the spirit and the body all acting together as one vessel, one bhagtamshtesam, your one capacious container. And the physical aspect of that is very important. So just because we're switched from spirit dance to drum at level three, doesn't mean that factors like Asqui, Numluk, Bochtgi, Moruch, that they're not in place. They still need to be in place. You need to have all of those in place. And the one that's particularly important for what I'm going to go on to talk about is Bertachlach, that idea that you are covered with a cloth and somehow you're moving around underneath that cloth. Mm-hmm. Imagine you're in a Mongolian gerf, but it doesn't have any structure, and it's just the cloth that makes up the outside of the tent or the ger is above you and around you and on you. And it's only a part of an analogy. because the idea of moruch, where it's just the covering on the shoulders, it really needs to go further than that. And so moruch and burnt taglach actually are kind of each other. They're the same thing. And it's like burnt taglach is like something that's like hidden within, but it's also the moruch kind of feeling where you are covered by, what are you covered by? You're covered by nature, right? And that's really, really important, because level three technique is where you're learning techniques that are going to bridge everything with Chalisti and everything about Amsaka. It's all about you, right? It's all about what's internal within you. You are in Amsaka level technique, level two, you are coming close to nature through the part of nature that's closest to you, your body. But beyond level three, getting into level four and onwards, we're going to be dissolving that differentiation between the shaman and nature. So what we're learning at level three is the techniques, the foundation of techniques that could enable us to do that. So there is a transitional, this level three is very much a transitional stage. It's a stage that you cannot do too much work on, because the higher stages, the higher levels of shamanism, like Morduch and so on, right up to the Nechtel, they require that you can do level technique without any thought whatsoever. You can do level three technique at a very sophisticated level while maintaining constant, complete chalisti, physical chalisti and spiritual chalisti. And obviously chalisti of the mind, which is like the absolute base level of chalisti. Yeah. So does that make some kind of sense to you, Joe? Yeah.
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 Okay, just to point out, you've just used a hell of a lot of terms there. So we do go into those, or you go into those, over the last few episodes, right? So over the last 10 episodes or so.
I did a review episode at some point in time, didn't I, mate? I did a review episode. Let me just see what that episode was. It was, it's called Huch Anug. And it's not a main sequence episode. It's called Monologue Number One. So that's where I kind of recapped a lot of these ideas, not all of them, but a lot of them. Yeah. But I'm assuming that if you're wanting to have a go at level three drum technique, that you're pretty familiar with these ideas. It's if you're not, then trying level three drum technique is probably a bad idea. It's probably go back to level one or level two. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the first thing, what's the first thing we need to do with level three? It's a thing called Dalsech. And what it is it's just simply keeping the vibration of the drum going. So you're hitting the drum, probably the best way, you hold the drum, probably good to practice Bukking Hendrik for a while. And then coming out of that, just keep chalisti on, and then you're just hitting the drum. It no longer has to be on the heartbeat. In fact, it probably, unless you're doing fast spirit dance, you should be hitting it a little bit more quickly than the heartbeat. Because what you want to do is for the vibration in the drum not to die away. Now, sometimes if you hit the drum too hard, you can kill that. Yeah. You just want to keep the, I've got the drum on the wall. I don't know if this is even possible on a podcast. This is the problem with podcasts. But even if I just use my hand and I don't use a beater. Better use the beater. What you want to hear is that, I don't know if you can, but you want to hear that the... It's not a constant beat, but I'm not allowing it to die.
Yeah.
You get that? Like that, yeah? So
that's with the beater. Are you just tapping it lightly with the beater there?
Lightly. If you hit it too hard, you can kill the vibration. So it's good to start light, yeah? So the issue is you're still in the half-task position. You've got that going. Your head's inclined into the back of the drum. What you want to feel is those vibrations. I'm sure you can. If you've been practicing Bukking Hendrik for a while, you'll feel those vibrations that are interacting with the movement of the energy inside your body. The vibrations are energy, and inside your body there is energy movement going on. There's your breath, there's your heart. If you're doing spirit dance at the same time, there's also all that kind of movement going on. There's all the changes of energy that go on in your body. And so what we're looking for is not to think about, not to imagine it, And we've talked about how to tell whether it's imagination or not at length in the past, but it needs to be in a state of chillicity. You at level three, you're starting to have those the energy from the environment interacting and intersecting with the energy patterns that are going on inside you. The issue here is that to make that easy, you're creating something far less subtle, which is the vibrations from the drum, than the energy that you typically get from the environment. This is why this is level three and not four or five or six or whatever. Yeah, the vibrations from the drum, they're energy patterns. And that, you know, I hope you noticed that I wasn't hitting it at a constant pace. I was hitting it fast, but there was a slight variation in the pace. That's important. You want to introduce some gravel into it, some granularity into it.
I mean, purely from an analytical point of view, just putting my old physics hat on, it's like vibrations and waves, isn't it? So when you hit the drum and there's that vibration going along the drum skin, if you hit it out of sync, then you're going to either add to the vibration or completely, at the extremes, you can double the vibration or you can kill it totally, depending on when you hit it. So I guess it's like, rather than thinking about it analytically, you don't want to be killing it, but you want to be feeling where those touches need
to be. So maybe that's also, you've got to remember, drums are a real thing. It's not a perfect instrument, especially the way they're made historically in Mongolia. You know, it's the hide of a black bull, you know, stretched over some laminated wood. It's not,
hence the smell.
Yeah, but they can smell great, mate. You know, don't think that the smell's always bad here.
I'm a legit.
Can smell good here. But the point there is that I don't think of it like that. Like, you know, you see those waveform signs. The way I would be described, what you want to you want to keep the vibration going, but you want to introduce some gravel into it. Yeah, some grit. So that if you think of it as a waveform, it would be a very random looking kind of waveform with some kind of consistency in it. Yeah. Because that creates patterns. You know when you chuck a rock in the pool and it has ripples that come out from it quite evenly, but if you throw three or four rocks at the same time, those ripples all intersect with each other and they make a funny like an interference pattern, right? That's what you want coming out of the drum.
Like I was saying, they add to it and take away from the main vibration.
Yeah. But they can make quite complex patterns, and there's no harm in having quite a complex pattern coming out of your drum for what I want to talk about today, yeah? So just the ability to do that is called delsech. It's just the ability to keep that going. And obviously, you've got to be able to keep it going in a state of chillicity. If you start thinking about it, you know, how am I doing this, which you probably will when you start off, you need to keep working on it and working on it and working on it until you can do it without sacrificing your state of chillicity.
Yeah. Can I just ask, right, that's a really, really good point. As far as the learning process goes, because it's not like you want to be worried about keeping chillicity on all the time in the learning process. It's like you get used to chillicity, fair enough, and then you introduce a new technique, and then even though you might be pretty competent with chillicity, it'll disappear, right? Because it's a new thing you're learning, and then it creeps back in, and this cycle keeps happening as you learn new techniques, as you get better at techniques. Well, as you build your guchuch, as we talk about.
Exactly.
I guess. Yeah.
That's right. Another thing to say about delsech is it's the analogy of the pool and throwing rocks in with those ripples. Some of those rocks of the drum are caused by the drum, and some of those rocks are caused by you. Yeah. The good news about you is that human beings are complex systems. There's a lot of stuff going on inside us. So you don't have to, in terms of the technique, you don't really have to worry about introducing those complex, the gravel into you. It's already there, yeah? It's only the drum that you have to be able to get that ability to hit it with it's a constant enough pace that it keeps the vibration going, but it's not so constant that you are killing the gravel that's coming out of the drum. That's probably the best way to put it. And delsech is both of those things. It's the two, it's the ripples that are made in the energy pool, if you like. Some of them are caused by metaphorical rocks that are chucked in by the drum. Some of them are caused by metaphorical rocks that are caused, chucked in by you. But the intersection pattern is common. It's shared. Does that make sense?
But yeah. Yep.
And that's what you're trying to get a sense of. So that's what delsech is about. But again, don't analyze it with your mind. I'm sure regular listeners know, the second you analyze it, you've all tried it. The second you analyze it, you kill it, right? So that's delsech. So delsech isn't really a technique. It's a skill. Yeah, so think of it as a foundational skill for level three, on top of your Ashgui, Numlach, Bochgi, Moruch, Bentaglach, and so on. Yeah, the thing that turns it into a Tzanwuch, which is a proper shamanic technique, is just like with spirit dance, where we have this morphing structure. You remember I used the term Tzanwuch in the context of morphing structure when we were talking about level three spirit dance. Mm-hmm. We're going to have morphing structure again, both physical and with the drum. So the very first technique that I'm going to tell you about is called, I've got to apologize for the name, okay? Even for me, I've studied Mongolian in my life. It's hard to pronounce. It's Huithlasen Dabalska, yeah? Huithlasen Dabalska. It's so what you're going to do is you're going to get that going, you're going to get the Delsech going, and then you're going to move, you're going to keep half tas, okay, throughout this. So the drum is not going to switch to tear up at any time. It's on the outside of the form. And you're going to move the drum slowly up and back over your head, keeping the vibration going over the top of your head, and then down the back of your neck, down to your back. Yeah, this is the first thing to try. And then just slowly bring it back again, keeping the vibration on and keeping Delsech on and keeping Chelicity on, including physical Chelicity, yeah? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to use an analogy. I do not want you to imagine this. I'm just using this analogy in order that you can understand where the drum is going, how the technique is like. I'd like you to imagine that the back of the drum, the open part of the drum, is like a big torch, yeah? And the sound waves coming out of there, the gravelly sound waves that are coming out of there, are like a light beam, yeah, coming out of that torch, yeah? Mm. And your body, is transparent, it's translucent, yeah? It's still complex inside, but it's made of like translucent stuff. And what you're doing is you're shining that torch through you. Now, a real torch can't do this because human beings are opaque. The light waves can't penetrate very much into the body, but the sound waves can. And this is the advantage of using the drum. I mean, you could do this technique with a torch, but it'd be pretty rubbish, right? You do it with a drum because those sound waves can penetrate into your body. And so what you're doing is in effect, is that interference pattern that's coming through the sound waves out of the drum and the energy changes that are going on within your body. And for instance, there's a very simple ones, the change of density in the lungs as you breathe in and out, that type of thing. You are using the drum in effect to kind of sound massage your chest and then your neck and then your face and then over the top of your head and then the back of your head and then the back of your neck and down to the back of your back, down your back, and then to repeat the process over and over. And not to think about when you're going to change direction either. You just naturally change direction as the spirit takes you, so you don't have to go all the way over every time. Yeah. And then in a way, you're kind of starting to bathe in the sound of the drum. You're starting to bathe, but you're bathing in it translucently. You're bathing in it as a clear component in the system, not as a closed component. It's not like you're tipping water over your head. It's like your tea bag. It's like if you were a tea bag, you're tipping water over your head as you're doing that. That's probably the best way to put it. Yeah. Mm. And then the extension of Huithlasen Dabalka is to start moving it as the spirit takes you around the whole of your body, around your abdomen, around to your back, around down your legs, around your loins, around down to your feet, over your other arm. Yeah. Because, of course, the arm that's holding the drum is bathed in this stuff all the time, so you shouldn't have any problem picking that up.
So you're playing and experimenting with where it's almost like, you know, like at an airport. Sorry for the analogy, but you know, like at an airport where they get that little X-ray thing or whatever, and that beeper thing, and they go all over your body to try and detect stuff. Are you doing that to yourself with the drum?
Yes,
you're just
absolutely.
Putting it wherever you want, You're
experimenting. It's not where you want, because you're not deciding. Yeah, but you're not deciding, right? We've talked about this before. It's find all the ways to cross the stream, right? It's Tosheltine, yeah. If you don't know what Tosheltine is, you definitely don't want to be listening to this episode. I'll make that point again. It's Tosheltine. So that's the first level of Huithlasen Dabalka. Dabasgar, sorry. It's too long since I studied Mongol, you know, just too long. I think I stopped studying Mongol formally. I think it was about 1995. But anyway, so
for those that don't know, you and me, we do these podcasts by talking on a normal phone, and literally all I'm hearing because of the quality of the phone is so I've got no chance.
That's good. So anyway, I think it's probably good enough. Anyway, I've got these technique names, patrons area or the grove, members area on the grove, probably I'll stick these techniques in so you can see what they look like. I might write them out. I wrote them out in, I think it was the physical cellistic things, I wrote them out in traditional Mongol script, which looks great. So I might do the same with these. So that's the first level of Huithlasen Dabalka. That's correct, that time. The second level is then to introduce a sort of slight wobble into the drum as you're hitting it. So just the same thing, but the drum sort of rocks back and forward so that the beam that's coming out of the drum isn't just like shining straight out. It's slightly rocking back and forwards with a vibration, similar to the vibration variation that you're putting in the drum. So what I mean is, this is why we really need video, but the drum is just rocking maybe an inch or two up at one side and down at the other side along the axis of your forearm. So if you imagine your forearms going into the drum, at a 90 degree angle, it's not quite 90 degrees, but anyway, that sort of thing, then you're rotating your forearm, the drum's along the back of your forearm, you're rotating your forearm so that if the drum was static in the standard half-tast position, the top of the drum would be coming about an inch or two closer to your face and then an inch or two further away from your face. And ditto, as the top of the drum comes towards your face, the bottom of the drum moves away and vice versa. Is that making some kind of sense, Joe?
Yeah, so it's like coming in and out, right? It's coming in and out. It's not twisting.
Exactly. You're like wobbling the beam. Yeah, you're making the beam wobble. And that takes some skill. This is definitely a learned skill. Obviously, it's easy enough to do if you're thinking about it, but in a state of chillicity, you really, really have to internalize that. So, in scientific terms, it's going through your spinal column, and it's not consulting your brain, and you get to this kind of rocking. And that same thing, once you get the sense for it, you'll be able to do, I guess this will be level three of the technique. You do exactly the same technique. So you're still moving it all over your body. You're in a state of chillicity. You're experiencing, you're not analyzing, you're experiencing the interference pattern that stuff is making with the energy that changes within your own body, the natural energy changes within your own body. You get a sense for how that works, and you'll find that there's play in that. So that the wobble, just like the rhythm, it's fairly constant. But it's not completely constant. It's not complete. And again, it's adding more gravel into the overall experience. Level three technique, as we've said, you know, the danger with anyone starting out on level technique is they will do the tyrak, tyrak, tyrak thing, and it will become very bland and they won't learn very much in the process. It's still level three technique. But, you know, too much
by that, you
kills
mean, cut, constant.
Constant on the beat.
Constant dance, exactly. Dance beat.
Exactly. And this is why you need to really, really be in a frame of mind not to entertain people, you know? I mean, we've all been exchanging various, homiluk, the shamanic technique homiluk has become a sort of performance art form in Mongolia. And there's some people who are absolutely amazing of it on Patreon. We've been exchanging videos of the band called The Who, who are phenomenal. But that whole thing puts you in a frame of mind. The fact that those guys exist, it puts you in a frame of mind that it has to be like musical. It has to be perfect. And if you go down that rabbit hole, you're going to miss the point of shamanic technique. The point of shamanic technique is to learn from nature. And so the more richness you can build into your level three technique, the more variety and variation you can build into it, the better, the more gravel you can put in it, because you're going to learn a lot more through doing that. Mm. It's like having a simple radar for nature versus a sophisticated, you know, multi-wavelength radar for nature, if you like. So I don't know too much about radar, but I'm just trying to use some sort of an analogy. But the point is that sophistication mustn't And this is why so many people obsess over Tyrak, because Tyrak, the cutting, there's nothing wrong with it, but other than that, it reduces the richness of the experience. And the more you use it, the more the richness of the experience is reduced. But the cutting is kind of just one part of a series of things. It's one part of a bunch of different energy changes, energy patterns that you need to use. So you can just think of that wobble. You know, every time it changes, you can think of that as Tyrak. Yeah. Every time that there's a little bit of granularity in it, that's a more sophisticated Tyrak rather than just, you know, sort of hopping up and down on one leg to a regular beat, which is Tyrak, right? But it's just like, it's like really the most boring Tyrak ever, you know. So you also want your Tolko, your Negdech, your Totolon, your Asak, your Shuruk, your Egeldech, and sure enough, you want Tyrak as well as Tengiz, yeah? Or Chirik, yeah? So you definitely want that Tyrak there, but you want it to be in the flow with all of the other energy changes. You don't just want it to be, you know, by itself alone. Because that doesn't correspond to the world. That doesn't correspond to nature. Nature is not like that. These things don't live in isolation. You can artificially isolate them, and in a way, that's what you do in dance. I mean, they actually call it isolation or isolating. A friend of mine who's a phenomenal dancer can do that, you know, move parts of their body that are without moving any of the rest of the body. And it looks good. It looks super cool, but it's not shamanic dance. It's not, you know, it's a learned skill, but it's, you're going to learn anything about nature from it. That's probably the best way to put it.
Just out of curiosity, Damon, do you think like the fact that the drum, which has permeated our every aspect of who we are as human beings, it's in every culture, it's in every form of music, pretty much. Do you think that has its roots because the drum is so important to our very being from a shamanic point of view, shamanic technique, and it's yeah, almost like a look back into our shamanic past and how important.
To a certain extent, absolutely. I mean, to a certain extent, the drum evolved with us, right?
But even to this like very day, it's like you can't look anywhere without some drums.
But when you really get, I mean, that's why Deltec is a great technique to practice, because what you find out is that the shaman is a drum. Yeah, the shaman is a drum. And in a way, the drum is a symbol of the shaman, because the shaman is a drum. The drum picks up the energy from the beater and then transfers it out into the world. The shaman picks up the energy from nature and then transfers it out into the world. It's not an accident that of all the musical instruments we could use, the drum is one that is favored by shamans, because Booking Hengrig, I refuse to explain the meaning of that term originally. The meaning of that term is pretty much what I just said. Yeah. It's the shaman is a drum. Yeah. And you can definitely get a sense of that through Delsec. What you find is your body starts vibrating and you get good enough at Delsec. That skill, remember, that's not the skill. The technique I've been describing is Huilas and Dabalska. The Delsec is the skill. Once you get that skill, you get good enough at that, you'll find you can do it without a drum. Yeah. You find you do the same thing without a drum while you're doing your spirit dance or whatever. The other thing is that rotation, the rotation that I talked about, that you're putting into your forearm, that rocking back and forwards with the drum. Delsec and Huithlassen Dabalska are also great ways to learn a technique that you will see Mongolian shamans and shamans all over the world using a lot. It's a technique that you see an awful lot. You won't have any problem finding a Mongolian shaman doing this on YouTube, as long as you know how to search for book in Cyrillic. There's loads of them on there. And I think there's one doing it on, there's a woman, a female shaman sitting on the ground in that promotional video we did for the Grove, sitting on the ground doing it, which is that rotation, that wobble that you're getting in your forearm, just switch that to your spinal column. Yeah, switch. So this is going to be the next level of this technique, is to switch that into your spinal column. I mean, don't stop doing it with your phone, but start doing the same thing, moving back and forwards. As you're scanning your body all over with the increasingly sophisticated gravel, sound gravel, you want to get that same sense, but it's the same sense. The problem with that technique, that you'll see the shaman rotating quickly from side to side along the line of their spine. The problem with teaching that as a technique is everybody starts doing this kind of body rotation, and it's not like that. There's like a tuning fork aspect to that. You know, it's like a physical bird, shikhar harate, that's in that movement. And you'll pick it up first in your forearm a lot better than you'll pick it up in your spine. Yeah. So there you are. Huth lesson, Dabathkar, can teach you that basic technique that a lot of shamans do just when they're doing their normal booking hengrik. So then you can, once you've learned that, you can sit yourself down. Once you've learned that technique through practicing Delsech, you can sit yourself down, you can get in a state of chillity, and then you can do just that as you're doing booking hengrik, yeah? So you can go back to your Amskar technique and get a more rich experience with that as well. So that's the number of levels for this technique. I've got another one I want to talk about, but for Huth Lesson Dabathkar, that's about as far as I wanted to go with it. Has that made some kind of sense? I know we don't have video, but, you know.
No, definitely. I mean, like you say, I think extra... Well, we bang on about it all the time, but it's so hard to convey this stuff on a podcast with audio. So, you know, extra resources
are
inevitable.
Just if anybody is listening and wondering why we're using Mongolian words instead of English words, if you most people listening probably know by now, but the answer is there are no English words for the things we're talking about.
Listen to episode 6. Is it 5 or 6? Listen to episode 5 or 6. It's the one that we did on the word spirit. It's a really good insight into language and how the Western language has evolved versus like the Far Eastern Chinese, Japanese, and Mongolian kind of languages. And it's a really interesting episode.
Checking which that episode is.
I think it's 6.
Because we've actually just mentioned that episode. Oh no, it's 5. It's 5.
Right. Yeah.
So you nearly got it right, Joe. It's well remembered. So we've actually just mentioned that episode on the Heretics podcast as well. It's one of my favorite episodes. Episode 5. 9-2.
I actually got an email just now, actually, from somebody who wrote into to our Woven Energy email and just said, you know, they found it absolutely brilliant, that episode. So that's really nice to hear as well. So that episode
is hitting home
with a few people. And I think very good reason. It makes perfect sense. It really does. So it's worth listening to.
So that's the reason. And it doesn't have to be Mongol. We know a lot of Chinese terms for these things. We know a lot of Japanese terms for these things. But Mongol's the language that does have shamanic words in it that I'm most familiar with, so that's the one that I tend to use, along with our made-up words like chilisti and stuff like that, which is Bangdamshtesab in Mongolia. So that's Huth Lesson Dabathkar, which is, if you want to remember it, it's a kind of idea of using the drum to generate... an analogy. Don't imagine it, though, for goodness sake. Don't imagine it. We're talking about real stuff, not imagination here. Yeah. To generate interference patterns within your body that you don't analyze, but you do learn from in a different way. You experience them. You experience that kind of richness. And that builds a guha, and it also builds a foundation for modok and ailal, the higher levels of technique, and guru, and these sort of things, these higher levels of technique. So that would well and truly be a level 3 drum technique, Huth Lesson Dabathkar. So the next technique I want to talk about has an even longer name. I apologize. Lach Shig Chirin Dach Jukh. Yeah. So I'm probably not going to trip off the tongue anytime soon. This is somewhat different. So this is back to your basic Delsech. Yeah. And when you're practicing the Delsech technique and you feel those, so forget all of that sophisticated vibrations and rotation and stuff that was going on with Huth Lesson Dabathkar. You're not doing that. You're just doing the basic Delsech, but you, in a way, you can think of the Huth Lesson Dabathkar as prep for this one. You want to then start moving the drum further away from your body and start walking around. So you might want to keep it in half tass, but extend the half tass out and maybe get to the point where you flip to Tirilt And now you're going to have a harder job, because the reason shamans put the head into the back of the drum is that the vibrations are much clearer that way. You get less off the front, but you can still do it off the front. And so what you want to do, first of all, is in the state chalice, you want to keep those vibration patterns going through your body. You can hit the drum a little harder if you want, as long as you don't kill the wave, as long as you don't kill its output. You want to keep a sense on, and you'll have to practice, because this is, as you move the drum physically away from your body, in any, you can do it in any direction, you can go up, out, whichever way you want, but the drum skin should be pointing at you, either with the drum in the half-task position, in which case the back of the skin's pointing at you, or in the tail position, in which case the front of the skin is pointing at you. Keep it pointing at you, and then start keeping that on in a state of chalice, and just start walking around, just like in the preparatory episodes we did, just talking about the very basics of spirit dance. Just start walking around. You want to be in a natural environment for this one. You don't want to do this one indoors. You want to move around your groove. If you've got a central focus, your standing stone or whatever, you just want to start moving around, just walking around in that same kind of, you know, way that we talked about. Keep all the things on. Ashgui, Numluk, Bokki, Muruj, Bentaglak, keep all those things on as you're moving around. And then just start allowing the drum to kind of lead you. What I mean by that is you've got a certain amount of richness in those waves, and just allow yourself to be turned by the bit of gravel that we've got in those waves. Allow your body smoothly. Don't force yourself around and jump around without any Tyrex. Nice and smooth. But maybe walk around quite briskly and just move around towards and away from objects or around objects in your environment. So like in my garden, I've set up three standing stones, and so I can move in and out of these things quite easy. If I'm up on the top of the moor, we've got the amazing hurlers. Look it up on YouTube, which are these massive standing stones that have been there forever. Three big stone circles. It doesn't have to be as exotic as that. Get out in the woods and just move around the trees. But to a certain extent, you want to get your brain switched off heavily, be able to walk and move around and constantly change direction, but change smoothly. You don't have to do sudden changes of direction. I know we have done some techniques like that in spirit dance. I'm not talking about that. Walk in circles, walk as in figures of eight, walk in patterns, and allow the drum to influence your movement and also the environment to influence your movement. So if you find yourself steering towards a tree, the tree will steer you around it. If you find yourself moving towards a rock, the rock will steer you around it. Sometimes you might find you want to leave the ground, you want to jump or whatever. That's just fine. But what you mustn't do is make decisions. Yeah, this is the key point with Latshig Chichirin Dagjuk, is you're not making decisions. You're allowing both the drum and the environment to guide you as you're moving around. Again, this is a very rapid beat on the drum. So it's just still that same Delsec technique. We're definitely going to do another episode, probably quite soon, on level 3 drum technique, which I'll be telling you some different kind of level 3 techniques. But this whole episode's really been about this Delsec technique. And the thing is, if you've got a groove, you know it very, very well. If you practice in the same groove all the time, you know it well. You're going to be able to do this quite quickly than if you don't know the environment, in which case chalicity is going to go for a while until you get used to it. But in some ways, not knowing the environment is also beneficial. That's a bit of Tosho Teen, right? So those woods that we used to train in, do you remember near that reservoir thing, Joe?
Yeah, yeah.
You remember there? They were ideal for this. You could move around freely between the trees. The ground wasn't flat, was it? There was ups and downs and stuff like that. And also, I remember in the autumn, though, there was amazing piles of leaves all over the ground, and your feet are moving through the leaves. It makes a fantastic sound. The sound of the leaves moving around with your feet will be kicking up sound vibrations, joining in with the drum, all increasing the richness. And what you want to do is feel like you're a leaf yourself. Feel like there's wind, and there's a very turbulent kind of wind blowing you around. And a lot of that wind, not all of it, a lot of that wind is coming out of the drum, but it's not a constant wind. It's a rich wind with lots of different variations, just like turbulence. Yeah. And so what you want to do is feel that you're a leaf being tossed around by that wind. You are not making it happen. The turbulence within the sound and the turbulence within the energy patterns in the environment, which remember that physical objects are also energy, right? They're quite strong energy patterns, rocks and trees and stuff, and the shape of the ground is also an energy pattern. All of those things in a state of chalicity are moving you, they're blowing you around like a leaf in the wind, yeah? And I'm just going to mention, I know you've got a question, Joe, but I'm just going to mention that do not worry what anybody thinks of you. As soon as you do that, you will kill your chalicity in an uneducated person's analysis. You're probably going to look strange doing that. And they probably have less polite ways of saying it. Look strange. Yeah. Be happy looking strange. Yeah. Because what you look like is completely irrelevant to this technique. And that's the thing with a lot of the problems with modern shamanism come from its aesthetic aspects. People try to make it look cool. They try to make it look new age. And, you know, that's why I feel a bit guilty. I always feel a bit guilty about this gorgeous bit of artwork that some amazing artisan has painted on my drum. In some ways, I feel guilty about that. You know, because that's not really shamanism, you know.
It's nice, but it's irrelevant to a certain extent.
Yeah, you know. And it does make me feel a bit uncomfortable sometimes, you know. But having said that, it's so what? So what if I feel uncomfortable? That's me sort of uncomfortable with me looking at myself, you know, which is also useless if you want to be a shaman. So what I'm saying is you're going to be in Lachig Chichirin Dachjuk. You're going to be a leaf tossed around by the wind. What is the wind? It's the energy patterns within your own body. It's the energy patterns, the strong energy patterns that the drum are making for you. It's the energy patterns that the environment is making for you. The shape of the ground, the leaves on the ground, if you can kick up the leaves, that's amazing. To make that kind of sound, you know. Or also, I practice this at the beach, get my shoes off, get down in the water, on the sand, the sound of the waves, you know, waves are always amazing, right? But also the sound of my feet moving through the very shallow water, this type of stuff, fantastic. The trees, all that kind of stuff. The real wind, if it's really windy, this is amazing, yeah? Because you can be a leaf in a real wind, not just a sound wind.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, that was on my mind about the actual wind. Because obviously you're talking about these different vibrations interacting with each other inside the drum and how we're almost absorbing that and translating that into movement or whatever. But the actual wind has so many like changes, so many interactions with each other, which we can use also.
It's fantastic. Sure. Yeah, and it can be strong. And, you know, if it's a gale, the wind is going to catch your drum, right? And you might think that's a problem. How am I going to, you know, it's a real strong gale, you know, storm force kind of thing. How am I going to keep my drum in place? No, that's the wrong question. You want the wind to do what it wants with your drum and you just go along with it. The drum is part of you and part of the drum. Whatever the wind does with your drum, that's what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Cool. So should we leave it there, Damon? I think that's
that's the two techniques. So the best, just to recap, the best skill is Delsech. And then you have two techniques built on it, Hüthlassen da Balka and Lachig Chichirin Dachjuch. And the next one of these, which I think we'll do quite soon, either the next episode or the one after, it'll be level 3 drum technique part 2. And I'll tell you about some very different drum techniques to give you a different perspective on level 3. Yeah?
Excellent.
Cool.
Right, fantastic. Let's leave it till next time then. We were talking about actually moving on to what we called Armabella, but we can talk about that later on.
And maybe we'll do that in the next one. Wanted to do ice first, didn't you? So let's do one on ice, and then we'll do another level 3 drum technique, yeah?
Definitely. I mean, it's all shamanism anyway, so it's all
absolutely.
Part of the richness and the tapestry that is the shamanism we talk about. Thanks thanks again, Damon. It's been a fantastic episode. Guys.
Hey, likewise, mate.
Yeah, you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/wovenenergy. Loads of extra resources on there. And if I'm not mistaken, Damon, if you donate a certain amount, then you can ask questions of yourself.
We have a great discussion group going now. We have a great discussion group with the power patrons and founder patrons. It's very, very healthy. Everybody's contributing. I've learned a lot from it. And actually, this episode came from that discussion group. There was an idea that came out in that discussion group. So, it's been great.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next time.
All right, all the best.